Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Thursday, the 29th of October. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, in Zanzibar, the opposition claims it has won the election, but the Electoral Commission has declared it null and void.
In the streets, the situation is mixed feelings, with confusion, and some people even don't believe that this has happened.
And Rwanda's lower house of parliament approves an amendment to the constitution permitting the president to rule for another 7 years.
Well, it has been a long time coming, an open secret that President Kagame will probably be extending his term.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
And we begin in Zanzibar, where the Electoral Commission has nullified the results of Sunday's election, blaming irregularities. On Monday, the main opposition presidential candidate, Saif Sharif Hamad, declared himself the winner before official results were released. He has rejected the annulment of the vote, urging his supporters to remain calm. Jane Ayeko asked our correspondent in Zanzibar, Khalif Mohammed, how people had been reacting to the news that they had apparently cast their ballots in vain.
Actually, in the streets, the situation is mixed feelings, with confusion, and some people even don't believe that this has happened. I have just visited a place called Michenzani, where the CCM camp and also CUF camp, the camp are deserted. People are not there, and I tried to follow them up where they are, and they told me, some of them, that we are confused. We don't believe that this thing has happened here in Zanzibar. So I can say that a situation is mixed feelings. There are some people who try to understand it, especially in the CCM side. They believe that it was the best thing that to be done. It was to be done so because CUF had reached the elections, so to say, for them. So it is a mixed feeling. It depends on which camp you are. If you are CCM here, then you are for the decision. And if you are CUF, you are against the decision.
What has been the reaction from the mainland, Dar es Salaam?
Till now, we haven't had anything in particular from the government, but we have heard from the head of Tanzania electoral body, Judge Damian Lubuva, who said that the decision cannot disrupt the Tanzanian election, which is now going on in the level of announcing results. So for him or for the NEC, they'll be going on as well, naming those who have won and those who have lost. So nothing will happen to be affecting the process in the mainland.
On Monday, the opposition candidate Saif Sharif Hamad declared himself winner. Is he still maintaining his victory, or what has been his response to the election nullification?
He said he doesn't recognize the nullification. For him, it was the wrong move, and legally and politically as well. So he wants the verification to go on and the winner to be announced.
Khalif Mohammed in Zanzibar. There is growing unease on the Tanzanian mainland, which also went to the polls on Sunday, and where the results of the elections were due to be announced later today. Opposition candidate Edward Lowassa has called on the National Election Commission, NEC, to postpone that announcement and to order a recount. Charles Ngereza reports from the Tanzanian city of Arusha.
Tension is mounting across Tanzania, the East African nation, after the results of the country's most competitive election since independence started trickling in from Monday morning this week. There are reports of widespread riots and heavy police patrols in the streets of big towns and cities, as well as in remote trade centers. Although no casualties have been reported, there are fears that the riots would degenerate into violence, leading to injuries and possible death. The situation worsened on Wednesday after an official announcement by the authorities on cancellation of the Zanzibar presidential election results and a statement by the opposition coalition presidential candidate for Tanzania, Edward Lowassa, that he would not accept the results being announced by the National Electoral Commission, NEC, since Monday. He spoke of massive fraud by the NEC officials, which he alleged has denied his coalition some votes in favor of the ruling party CCM, presidential candidate Dr. John Pombe Magufuli, who is in a narrow lead against Lowassa for presidential vote figures already released. I spoke to a senior political analyst from Makumira University in Tanzania, and here is his opinion with regard to what's happening on the ground in Tanzania.
In my opinion, it's not fair or it's not good to influence your to take this youth on to the street to protest for election, which is considered and has been commended by international observers that it was one of the best and fair and transparent election.
Chadema youth wing leader Ringo Daniel spoke about the way forward for the opposition in the quest.
If the government will reach the point to raise the emotions of people who have been oppressed for a long time, they will pay the price for them. It will gonna cost the life of people because people are fed up. And you know, when people are fed up, for sure we want to find any way to do to get rid of this because it's totally corrupted, it's totally bad.
Cuthbert Christopher from the Tanganyika Law Society spoke about the legal complication now that results in Zanzibar have been nullified.
This is a political federation, a political union between Tanzania mainland and Zanzibar. So basically what has happened is that Zanzibar Electoral Commission, which is governed by its own law and is also governed by the constitution of Zanzibar, has the mandate to annul elections that are concerned with Zanzibar only.
A lawyer's assessment of the elections in Tanzania, ending that report by Charles Ngereza.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In Rwanda, the lower house of parliament has approved an amendment to the constitution that will allow President Paul Kagame to rule for 7 more years after his second term expires in 2017. The amendment is still to be put to a referendum, but there is not expected to be much resistance. However, the amendment was sharply criticised by Frank Habineza, leader of the Democratic Green Opposition Party, who said Kagame was trying to entrench a culture of dictatorship in the country. Jane Ayeko asked Pritish Bahuria from the London School of Economics and Political Science in the UK for his assessment.
Well, it has been a long time coming, an open secret that President Kagame will probably be extending his term. I suppose there are two views. There's one view that President Kagame shouldn't be following a long line of other leaders in the region who've extended their term, and another that takes a more pragmatic view that since the population demanded and the economic growth has been achieved in Rwanda to a certain extent, there would be no point pushing through democracy too early when there are political blockages to it within the country. I think I would be much closer to that second point of view. Not so much that there is clear political support for this move within the country, but that given the current political constraints in the system, it may be better to allow this to happen rather than do anything else, really.
What could be the implications on Rwanda's politics if President Kagame is given the nod to run for another term?
Well, I think politics can be viewed here in perhaps three different ways. First, in terms of donors, there is a question whether donors will continue to support Rwanda the way it has. I think this is going to be a key issue going forward for the government. During the last few years, there has been also a significant gradual culling of senior elites within the country. And while there seems to be popular support within the RPF, I think there will be a need to get other senior leaders within the RPF on side. And the third is the population and continuing to commit to economic development, which Kagame's led RPF has done very successfully.
Now, some critics argue that African leaders are modifying constitutions to match some of the Western democracies who have unlimited terms for their leaders. Could it be that Africans are actually copying this, or is it just a matter of doing things out of greed?
I think critics are quite right to say that being pushed to democratize without taking into account other factors is, and being forced to do this is not exactly the right move. But at the same point, democracy on itself is something that all the leaders in these countries say that they are doing. So there must be a commitment to transitioning and eventually moving on. Of course, Domelez is perhaps not the right example because he did pass away. They have created a transition in Ethiopia. I think that will be the challenge for Rwanda and other countries to follow in that line. And perhaps Tanzania, although I think the same commitment to economic development doesn't reside there as in Ethiopia.
British Bahuria from LSE in the UK. And this station, Deutsche Welle, has also been talking to Louise Mushikiwabo, Rwanda's foreign minister. You can find the interview on our website, dw.com/Africa. In Cameroon, the country's blind community has taken it upon itself to raise awareness of the white cane among the general public. They want sighted people to understand that the white cane is not just a mobility tool. Carrying it is also an act of courtesy towards others. Better appreciation of the needs of the visually impaired could also help avoid accidents. Maki Kinseka has sent us this report.
The first sign, if, for example, I want to stop a taxi, so he will put his legs like a V, and put letter V, I mean, and put the cane in between.
Son Lingam, accompanied by 10 other blind persons, are standing beside a traffic light in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Their aim is to explain to drivers and commuters the importance of respecting the white cane, which aids and guides visually impaired people as they walk. To Son Lingam, the cane is a sign of being independent. Lingam says they decided to raise awareness when a visually impaired teenager was killed in an accident last week by a taxi driver who did not understand signs of the white cane.
They don't know the usefulness of the white cane and what it even means. When drivers or motorbike riders, they don't know the sign, it becomes very difficult for a blind to move alone. And for our autonomy, we need to start moving alone. In fact, there are so many difficulties that you go through because these people are not informed, they are not sensitized about the usefulness of the white cane, and sometimes they can create death.
Among the people who are curious about the message is Marine Boza. She parked her car to listen to the visually impaired.
On sait pas beaucoup ce qu'ils veulent dire.
I do not understand what they want to demonstrate, but quite often we drivers see white canes raised up in town. We do not understand what they are all about, so we just drive away.
Electronic technician Timothy Wunze is among those listening to the blind men. He tells me he has learned a valuable lesson from them.
When they leave their white canes while on zebra crossings or where there's an obstacle like water or a river, it means they need your assistance to enable them to cross.
Besides raising awareness on the white cane at road junctions, Sam Lingam says blind people in Cameroon are pressing for government to introduce it as lessons in schools.
In fact, it's good to teach these signs and the importance of the white cane to all the driving schools, but we should not only stop there because there are people who will not know how to drive, but at least they go to primary school. So we can select either in class 5, class 6, when people are understanding already, they can be taught these different signs and the importance of the white cane, and consequently the message will be sent across.
And Sam Lingam hopes that this message will help Cameroonians understand and respect signs made with the white cane by blind people.
Maki Kinseka. Regular listeners will have noticed that our popular series, The Crossroads Generation, about a group of African teenagers, has now come to an end. But we've a brand new series for you starting next week. What can we expect? Well, Janie Yeko has been talking to the team behind the new series.
DW, Deutsche Welle, Made for Minds.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of DW's Radio Novella. By now, you might have all noticed that our Learning by Ear Radio Novella Crossroads Generation came to an end after 4 seasons. These 4 seasons lasted 2 years, and honestly, after 2 years, we need something brand new. For the first time, DW presents crime stories starting next week. This new program is called Crime Fighters. And before I get into the details of Crime Fighters, I have two visitors in the studio with me. They will be telling us more about that. And on my right is Udi Genspittel.
Hello.
Udi Genspittel is one of the project managers of DW's Radio Plays. But I also have one very special visitor here, and she's called Pinado Abduaba. She's one of the authors of Crime Fighter series. I'm looking forward to hearing a lot more from these two guests. You're all welcome.
Thank you
very much.
And now let's start with Udi. What is this new series all about? I'm very fascinated about the name, Crime Fighters. Just tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah, well, Crime Fighters is going to be very exciting with a lot of suspense. Of course, we stay in the tradition, the long tradition of learning by ear, which is we are producing radio plays. They are entertaining for the listeners, but we also put some importance on the knowledge transfer. It's entertaining, but we also want to give some key messages for the listeners to give them food for thought. And in Crime Fighters, as I said, we're going to have a lot of suspense with detective stories. We have four different series, four different detective teams, and these teams are doing inquiries on four different cases. Four different cases. Mostly, if I can give a little clue, it starts with a dead body.
Dead body?
What? Yes, a murder, so to speak.
Okay, and just tell me, how did you decide to go on to choose the topic? What was the guiding, the theory behind choosing the topic, crime?
Well, crime is more the form of the series rather than the topics, because we have a main topic within each story. Of course, we have detectives, we have policemen, and like I said, there's usually a death at mm-hmm. the start. But the main topics of this series are challenges or problems that the African continent is faced with. For example, the first radio play that's going to play is about the recruitment of young people by terror groups.
So that actually tells me that the setup is still within the African continent, or even to say sub-Saharan Africa.
Yes, of course.
Sounds rather very interesting. So just tell me, where were the radio plays produced?
Well, the radio plays, we have to mention, they're not only in English, they're in five different languages. Uh-huh. We wanted to have African authors. The different productions are done in Africa with African actors, with local actors. The English version was done in Nairobi, in Kenya. The French one was done in Abidjan, in the Ivory Coast. The Hausa was done in Abuja, in Nigeria, and so on and so forth. We also have Portuguese and Kiswahili.
Yeah, before I'll certainly get back to you for more details, but I'm very eager to hear from Pina, because from the little that I've known, I've gotten a chance to read the synopsis of your play, The Radical Journey. The name alone is quite fascinating, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you. But before the play goes on air, just tell me, what is it about? What is The Radical Journey all about?
It's about two young police officers. The story is about them trying to investigate a suicide bombing that happened in their community. And the suicide bomber happened to be a female, and one that came from a very rich and influential family. Now, the case is most times when they hear about suicide bombing, it's about, okay, maybe it's a poor person, somebody unknown, and then people start saying, oh, it's poverty and all that. But this one, it was different because she comes from a very influential family. So why did she do it? And then when they started the investigation, they now started finding out how terror groups actually appeal to young people and the different formats in which they use in recruiting them. So that is why it's The Radical Journey. It took them on a journey to find out things even about themselves that they didn't realize.
Well, you heard it from the author's mouth, but just to give you an insight of what it looks like or what you expect to hear, let's just play a little introduction to it and hope you like it.
So we've confirmed that it was a suicide bombing. The cosmetics shop was crowded. Five people died along with the bomber.
Sir, what we do know is that the suicide bomber was a woman.
A woman? How strange.
But it isn't the first time.
In a development believed to be unprecedented in Kululaland, the body of the suicide bomber at the Domingo shopping mall has been identified as 20-year-old Zora Kasim, daughter of the current Commissioner of Finance, Honorable Kasim. She had just graduated from Tabuka.
Honorable Kasim, just one question. Is your daughter affiliated to Scambo, the warlord of the sword?
No comment.
Honorable Kasim, how long has your daughter been a part of a terrorist organization?
No comment. Leave me alone.
Why don't I go and question the young girl who was arrested last week? Remember? Similar age to Zora, similar circumstances, but her bomb failed to explode. Maybe she knows something about Zora.
And I'm going to visit some of the popular youth hangouts, especially in the underprivileged areas like Biloka and Mekiri. Yesterday, we had a briefing from the anti-terrorism squad. They confirmed that recruitment is ongoing in these districts.
Joyce? Why did you join the Sword Sages?
Your colleagues from the police murdered my husband in cold blood. Called him a terrorist. Imagine the hardship and humiliation we suffered.
I understand that you feel wronged. But why did you decide to resort to this kind of violence? Putting on a bomb belt to kill innocent people.
Hey, Jude! Hey, I thought it was you.
Bobo, how are you? I haven't seen you since high school.
I've been searching for a job, but no luck. The thing is, I am in serious need of cash.
Things are really difficult these days.
I blame the government and those greedy politicians for everything. Young people are starting to take matters into their own hands, and their actions are going to shock this government.
I want a report on my table first thing tomorrow morning.
Sir.
Yes, Jude. Take cover! Get down! Everybody, get down!
Okay, that sounds quite interesting. So if I got it right from you, the radical journey describes the mechanisms of terror groups, particularly how they recruit young people, how they incite them, and how they carry out their activities. Now, this drives me into thinking, how did you come about this idea, all this kind of stuff? But just tell me how you went about researching this project.
I am a journalist as well, and every day we report about terror. So it was quite easy for me to put myself into that position. But then as well, it is a fairly new thing. And some of the things I was discovering as reasons why people go into terror or allow themselves to be recruited, some of them sound silly or ridiculous or something like that. So it was for me to be able to talk to people about it to see, okay, what is the reality? What will work and what will not work?
Sounds quite interesting, but I'll get back to Odi at the moment. You talked about crime fighters also having forcery, so to say, and also covering other topics. And we've just been talking about crime or terrorism. Which are the other topics that you're handling in this series?
Well, the other topics also have something to do with crime and fighting crime. One of them, for example, is poaching. So the illegal killing of wild animals to steal the tusks for the elephants or the horn of the rhinos, for example. Another topic, very important one, is land grabbing. And then the first one is about fake drugs. Mm-hmm. And this is also to make the listeners aware of the dangers of counterfeit medication.
Thank you very much, Pina and Eddie. I don't want to ask you too many questions, lest we get out all the information in the play and people want to enjoy it. So let's leave it at that and look forward to enjoying the whole series coming up. The topics are very interesting, very exciting, and I look forward to listening. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane Ayeko, and you can hear the first episode of Crime Fighters this coming Monday here on Africa Link, our main stories. Doubt hangs over Tanzania's elections after Zanzibar declares its poll null and void. And Rwanda's lower house of parliament has approved a constitutional amendment that will allow President Paul Kagame to extend his rule by another 7 years. Remember, we welcome your comments on this programme. You can send a text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.